Lumosity.com. That's right. You work hard to stay in shape. Try to eat right. Go to the gym. I know. Do that as well. That's for our body. And that helps our brain, too. But we don't often do something specific for the brain. Of course, everyone complains they want to stay sharp and focused and work and in everyday life. Lumosity.com is like a personal trainer for your brain. They're quick daily online workouts, and I will use them before I go on my HLN program. And I think it helps me with my focus and delivery. I really have noticed a difference. You can be sharper, better problem solver. And by the way, that's very personalized. You sort of have a way of setting it up in such a way that the exercises are personalized to meet your goals. Lumosity.com is based on a science called neuroplasticity. And I think we're all aware that our brains change, and our brains particularly change when we age. And what you don't use, you lose. And start training with Lumosity.com today. Go to Lumosity.com and click on the Start Training, and you get free training to begin immediately. Lumosity.com, and tell them you heard it from me, Dr. Drew. Hey, it is time for me to talk again about our friends at GoToMeeting, and Adam and I are obviously very enthusiastic about this product. We use it all the time, GoToMeeting with HD Faces. If you want to get your team together, it really is quite an amazing advancement to be able to see everybody, talk to everybody in real time, and work on documents together. You literally can throw your own document up, and other people can work on that document. You can take it down, and then you can work on their documents. It is amazing. And listen, again, Adam and I do this almost every meeting we have. We try to use GoToMeeting because it's great. And you can do it from your iPad. It's simple to launch, join a meeting from anywhere using your computer, even a smartphone. We love GoToMeeting. Share how your team uses GoToMeeting to get work done. Go to Meeting free for 30 days. Don't wait for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and then use the promo code Dr. Drew. Remember, use that promo code Dr. Drew and you get 30 days free. GoToMeeting.
This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Today should be very interesting. I am welcoming the great Mark Iglarsh, who is sitting on hold with me right now. I'll tell you about him in a second, but first I want to remind you to please click through on the Amazon link at drdrew.com to support the show. Corolla was on me a little bit. It's like, you're not pulling your weight necessarily here. So you guys have been doing a great job, but please keep that up. Also, a reminder that you can get the CD at iTunes or at drdrew.com, the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast. And Chris and I are planning to do some more similar swinging groovy tunes, but with different tones, like for some for like dating.
Cocktail party.
Yeah. And this one is more the sort of upbeat, swinging, groovy tunes. They're more like along the lines of the intro music you're hearing. And in fact, that music too is on the CD. So if you like that, you can get that at iTunes. And finally, the Adam and Drew Reunion Tour is available on iTunes as well. Volume 1, highlights for the first three shows. He and I are off to we've got a bunch of stuff planned coming up. You'll be able to get those as other volumes emerge. Mark Iglarsh, his website is speaktomark.com. His Twitter handle is at Mark Iglarsh, E-I-G-L-A-R-S-H. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you, my brother?
I'm good, my friend. So this is going to be very interesting because you and I are always stuck on television throwing, sound bites across a medium that doesn't tolerate long-form conversation, which is why I like doing podcasts because we can really get into stuff. And lately, you and I have been stuck talking about Joni Arias. And I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but we have gone with the – Well, let's talk about that. Let's start with that. Have you enjoyed talking about it? Have you think it's been a good thing? The audience certainly seems to want it, and so we
do it. Now, first of all, it's uncomfortable for me to speak to you about Jody Harris without wearing makeup. I need that, I think. I'm going to go put some on.
Go put some on. Normally wear makeup in your daily life, so I don't understand what the problem
the
is.
Panties, I have no excuse for.
Right.
All right, so Jody Arias. Yeah, no, it's not about – see, Jody Arias, I could give a rat's ass about.
Right.
It is the issues surrounding the case, both legal and then because of you, what's in her head issues that have me fascinated.
Right. And so we've kind of enjoyed chewing on this, even though left to our own devices, we wouldn't be very interested in this. What do you think makes people interested in this case?
it starts with a pretty shell, and I use pretty with quotations around it.
Yeah.
You know, you have an arguably pretty defendant who, when you look at her, you just don't think that she's capable of doing what's being alleged. You throw in some audio recordings that have anal and other sex on there.
It's always good.
And a victim who people feel for. You've got the perfect HLN story.
Yeah, certainly the sex tapes made a – when we saw this thing coming, I don't know if you know that we sort of saw this coming before we got to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know about her spending 2 weeks on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know about sex tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's – you're right. What kind of pushed this thing over the top and made people infinitely interested. Do you think during this sort of the mitigation phase, people are going to lose interest?
I think that people wanted her to be found guilty, whether she gets life or whether she gets death. I don't think that the venom is there like it was for her to be found guilty, knowing that she will, you know, spend the rest of her life in prison. So yeah, I think it's going to the interest will go down, but I still think that the interest is going to be there to some extent.
Well, here's one of the things I want to talk about. I was thinking about this as I was driving over, just before I got my car today. I was thinking, there's parts of this case that I find deeply disturbing.
What kind of car do you have?
I have a little Audi.
Okay. Convertible or not?
No.
Hardtop.
Hardtop.
Okay.
And I have an old Cayenne, Porsche Cayenne.
Okay.
Those are things.
Okay, go on.
Why? Pourquoi?
I'm just curious. I needed a picture of you driving home in a car.
Fair enough.
I'll
give you the whole picture. I was walking outside my garage. We're in a heat wave. It's ridiculously hot here right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at a bunch of lizards flying around and watching mm-hmm. the wildlife, thinking about the – some reason I was thinking about the behavior of humans in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody Twittered me this morning and they said something about, does it make you feel bad that people are behaving like they did in Roman times in the Colosseum watching gladiators fight?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sort of a superficial – brush with something that I think is really quite profound, which is the behavior of mobs. And I think now we are getting more and more involved in mob behavior. I believe that the more traumatized a population, the more they act out as mobs. I just look at history and I think,
I got to interject. One thing that you said that I caught right before the verdict, which was unbelievably profound, which was completely either ignored, dismissed, or minimized by Nancy Grace, was what you were talking about. You were identifying this mob mentality.
Yeah.
Really, the only thing I was thinking was missing were the pitchforks.
Yes, right.
And that was brilliant. I love that you said that, not because I like you, but because as a human being, I was listening to what you were saying. And, of course, Nancy just
she wanted to talk a little bit about the working of the system. So I tried to bring it back to that, to early observations about our system. With Alexis de Tocqueville and what he was observing, those same kinds of things. Like his concern was the tyranny of the majority,
mm-hmm.
which is another sort of mob kind of thing. That's sort of an orderly mob, which is when a majority, simply by virtue of the fact that they are a majority, can do what they want in a democracy, take rights and privileges away from a minority. Just because.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing this with gay marriage right now in California. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But separate conversation. So the mom thing bothers me. I when I look around, and I've studied this very carefully. I don't know why I got deeply into it at one point. You know what else? I was writing that book on narcissism and how people deal with celebrities. And I thought, you know, part of this mob mentality is how we deal with celebrity too. We like to build them up and tear them down.
Yes. Which,
that's sort of part of mob behavior. We idealize and then de-idealize. And in de-idealization, if we're really a mob, we have to kill them. But when we kill them, we feel guilty and we want them to resurrect themselves to relieve us of our guilt. And that's why we like sort of stories of redemption also. It helps us relieve us of this stupid behavior we're doing. So I was looking around for models of mob mentality in history. And obviously Rome is an easy thing to point at. But where I really saw it in an interesting way was pre-revolutionary France. And people don't often think that was a terribly traumatizing time. Families were falling, very much like the 60s in my opinion. Don't know, I'm not a historian, but it looked like the 60s to me in the United States, where everything was being questioned. Everything, you know, there was a very flush economic time. And, you know, think about what attracted Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson to France. It was the chicks and the way they could just kind of have parties every night. That's all they did. And
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. But the things were – I mean, if you read about – I mean, Josephine, you know, the people – Josephine was basically a prostitute, basically, you know, Bonaparte's wife. And this, there were just people that hung out at these parties and screwed around a lot and had threesomes and whatever. And that's what they did. Whatever you're into, man. It was one of those periods. And out of that came this huge mob mentality. And by the way, even if you read Rousseau and things, he's talking about the highly – I mean, think of – was it Rousseau himself? Yeah, Rousseau himself had five children, right? Had five children. And he took each one and left them at an orphanage as soon as they were born.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's it. I'm done. What are you going to do? You know, I'm into some other stuff. And so I just – you know, he's busy worrying about humanity. But when it comes to actually raising children, it's like, well, you know, the nuns can do that. A huge percentage of France at that period and for the next many, many decades were raised in orphanages and not around. It was just a decayed time. And was it Rousseau? I'm confusing my history now. I think it's Rousseau. Yeah, he wrote one of the first autobiographies, and he spent a long period of time where he was sort of the boy toy of an older woman.
It's been so long, I forgot why we went down this path.
Because I was talking about mob mentality and then things that set up mob mentality.
Yes.
And so this is the great thing about it. I can go as long as I want, Mark. It's a webcast. I can just
go.
People can rewind it and go, what the hell was he talking about? Why did we go down this path? It's not television. It's not radio. It has no need for any of that bullshit.
Wow.
So, okay,
we don't have to get to the point quickly.
No, you can just go on, make your points, go on as a place.
So, never done this.
Now,
yeah.
By the way, everyone's looking for the next episode of my podcast, turning this one off, mind you. But all right, at least they downloaded this one. Point being is that mobs. So the other place I found an incredible mob mentality and mob behavior is Aztecs. And this was an extremely traumatized population. They were trying to create warriors. They had something called a codex of how to read, how to raise children. And literally, you're supposed to hold your children over fire. I mean, they traumatized the shit out of kids. And then, lo and behold, surprisingly, they all stood by while people had their hearts torn out. Ho, ho, what are you going to do here? And this sort of unifying experience of aggression through mob is something that grows out of disrupted childhoods and disrupted families. And so here we are now. Mm-hmm. And so people outside the courthouse and on Twitter and in social media looking at Jodi Arias – she's treated like a non-human, an absolute non-human. Now, bad human, I'll grant you, but non-human. And I am deeply troubled by that, deeply troubled by that behavior. Did you
– You know what? You know, I admire your courage of being able to express that when 99.9% of the people not only could in no way get what you're saying, but will turn on you.
Well,
I couldn't believe – I was cringing when you said those things on air. I was like – why is he doing – I get it because I'm from a different world. I get it. Why is he doing that? His people – I mean, maybe it's good for viewership. I have no idea.
Well,
it was real. It's what you were thinking. Maybe you didn't think it through, but these they don't want to hear that.
Well, I don't care. It's the truth.
Right.
And my whole job is to sort of tell the truth and interpret things. And there's a lot of things people don't want to hear, evidently, because I do get attacked all the time in social media, the time.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was looking at something today. I couldn't even believe it. It's like, what in the world do you – you know what it was? I was coming out in favor of Angelina Jolie and Cara DioGuardi, who had their breast removed because they were BRCA positive. Mm-hmm. And Cara had actually had a hysterectomy. And people were like, she had a hysterectomy, not a mastectomy. I go, Jesus Christ. I know she had a hysterectomy and she's planning her breast revisions. I talked to her about it when you were there with The View, remember, Mark?
Yeah,
we were both
there.
Did you know that's why she was there to talk about that?
I only watched the show and then learned then. Yeah,
yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so I fully applaud these women because they're bringing that. And I was also interested to see how people are like, oh, I didn't know about that. Or does my insurance pay for it? And yes, it does,
mm-hmm.
in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really important thing. It's preventing cancer. These women are high risk for ovarian and breast cancer. And by the way, then there was a whole league of people piling on with, well, it's just the medical establishment just abusing people and they don't really need to do this. The risks aren't that high. Can't we trust anything anymore? Is nothing meaningful? No objective information? You can't receive anything.
I respect people's view of that, though. I mean, there have been many the two doctors and top in their field who told me I needed shoulder surgery. I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Well, that's a lot different.
All right.
That's a lot. Having breasts, you have your breasts and your pelvic organs removed is a lot different than, hey, we need to tighten up your
maybe
antennas.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I could take the position that, one broad brush stroke, doctors don't make money unless they do the surgery. Mark, I have no idea whether that's a smart response.
You're scaring me.
I'm not saying that that's my position. I'm just saying that someone could then have the experience where a doctor tries to get them to have some surgery that they don't need, and then all of a sudden every doctor now is condemned. I'm not saying that that's accurate or that's a good way to think, but I understand why people do.
Well, but that means then there's no authority you can trust, except ones that are contrarian, except the ones that take issue with anybody with any expertise.
A lot of women that don't trust men because they've been through too many experiences? Similarly, you know, doctors, depends. Lawyers, a lot of people don't trust lawyers because they've been screwed by lawyers too many times. It just happens, and that becomes more of a challenge for me to earn their trust.
Oof. You know, I was just thinking about drug companies and how they're so distrusted now, too. I was thinking about that this morning, too. And there used to be a collaborative relationship between physicians and drug companies, and I was just funny. You're bringing out all the conversation I was having with myself this morning as I was getting ready. Mm-hmm. And I remember when they jumped the shark for me because when I was the director of a program, I was the chief resident. The drug companies would give us money to bring speakers in, and it was seen like collaborative. The speakers didn't have to have anything to do with their products, but it was just brought to you by, and fine. And the residents appreciated that. And we didn't, you know, joke's on them. They're paying for our. Our education, like, fine, it's collaboration, fine, whatever. They jumped the shark to me when I remember in like 1987, I had a fight with an Upjohn executive who insisted that Xanax didn't have any withdrawal, that it was just, this is the position they were taking, that it was only their emergence of their pre-existing anxiety that was so well controlled with the Xanax. And I was like, get the fuck out of my office. I just had somebody seize last night. Get out of here and don't ever say that again. And so that's where they, you know, that's, again, they took advantage and they overstepped boundaries all over the place. But the weird thing now is that you can't even, as a physician, you can't even talk about using medication of any type. Don't you think that's weird? Because that's all I got. I don't cut. I'm not a surgeon. I use my relationship. I think that's very important. And that's been left out of medicine. Doctors are only allowed to prescribe and cut. That's about it. And so, how can we talk?
I did have a thought about why people are so distrusting. I was trying to figure that out. I think that what's changed, you know, back in the day, you had like, you know, few newspapers and a couple of TV channels. Now, whether it be with Facebook, Twitter, all the cable stations, all the different places that you can find quote unquote news or reports or opinions,
or just information, yeah.
Everybody's putting out everything. Eventually, there's nothing that's sacred.
That's right.
Nothing. Everything is bad. Because, look, people are fighting for content, something original, something different. You can pick – if Mother Teresa was alive today, there would be negative stuff written about her.
Oh, for sure. I've seen that. Actually is, right. Believe it or not.
But that's – you know, so that's the – you got to have thick skin
But then where do you go for information you can that's reasonable, especially when people don't have any training? So they don't have judgment.
Right.
They can't read the information and assess for themselves whether this is a good study or a bad study
it's
or
tough.
Bullshit
there's
or
always,
not.
Every decision I make, there's always a doubt in my mind. It doesn't matter.
Doubt is one thing. Doubt is good because that's where you stand back and evaluate. I go to people that dedicate their lives to studying these things. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If I want to know the behavior of plankton, I go to MIT and the Department of Biology and find the guy that studied plankton for 30 years. And whatever that guy's got to say, I think that's a good place to start.
Well, prior to a few months ago, you would have said, you know, if I want to know about domestic violence, I'd go to, I don't know, La Violette.
No, not in a courtroom, though. Not in a courtroom, because people are paid to say things in a courtroom.
That's what people
don't understand.
But see, now she's been discredited in your eyes, maybe in my eyes, too. And, you know, she was somebody who apparently, not that I ever had a need to talk to anybody who's an expert in domestic violence, but that's just an example.
Let me take off, pull back the curtain a little bit. I had great sympathy for what she was saying. She was sent in to empathize with an individual. That's her, not only empathize her, but represent her. And if you go in and you attune to a patient, you take their point of view. That's part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing that, and she was doing that from the perspective of someone who does that a lot,
mm-hmm.
not someone who is used to a psychopath. That's why I'm always, when we talk about Jody particularly, I'm like, I don't understand psychopaths. I don't deal with them. Or if I do, I get rid of them really fast, so I'm not working mm-hmm. with them at all. So if she is a psychopath, then she's just a goal-directed, self-preoccupied, you know, brain-impaired person who can't appreciate that other people have any feelings or any life of their own, well, then La Violette's, that's the wrong person. Wrong person.
Yeah.
Right?
My cross-examination would have been, I mean, I can't say for sure, but probably maybe an hour, maybe an hour and a half, and it would have been very simple. It would have been solely based upon, well, what did you what you learned was based upon what she told you. Well, not just what she told me from other things. I know, but those other things, she offered explanations for those things because you can't, you know, you don't know what the meaning is in and of itself. Correct. So what percent, 80%, 90, 95% came from what she says? If she's lying to you, then that throws off everything. Correct? Correct.
Right.
And you just kind of leave it at that.
Yeah.
It really is very simple.
But you might go down the path, too, of dealing with lying patients. Do you always trust your patients? Because this, by the way, Mark, this is a major error that clinicians make, that in addiction medicine, we assume they're lying all the time. And our job becomes trying to sort out what's real and what's not. And you have to really develop a keen instinct on that. I think I've told this story before. I'll tell it really quickly now. I remember a guy I was treating, a heroin addict. I've actually written about this a little bit. And he was a guy I cared about. I mean, a kid, young kid dying of heroin addiction. He came in after a recent overdose, and he barely made it through. And he was in my office sobbing. I mean, he was like, oh, this is so – you can't imagine the pain I'm in. This is killing me. This is – I mean, this is scary. This is it. This time I don't know if I can kick this thing, I'm going to. I'm going to do what you told me and sort of placate. And I was sitting there listening, feeling this guy's pain, going, oh, my God, this poor kid. And I've learned to always trust what comes out of my mouth when I'm dealing with addicts. And suddenly what came out of my mouth was, you're so full of shit, I don't even know what to believe anymore. I was shocked. He was shocked.
What were you shocked? That's a total normal
place. But I went right past his pain into his bullshit. And I went, and he stopped. He stopped crying. He looked at me. I was shocked at what I'd said. He was shocked. And I thought, oh, man, here it comes. He's a bunch of righteous indignation and more bullshit. And he went, I know. How do you know? I can't even tell what's what anymore. I don't know when I'm bullshitting or I'm not. And I thought, well, there you go. That's real.
It's a disease. You're talking to the disease. It's bigger than him.
That's right.
You know, he may have that intention, but the disease is doing push-ups ready to kill him. So.
That's right. But that moment, he and I started to work because he knew I could touch that thing that was running rampant in him and could sort of see past his bullshit. And that's what sponsors do with people. And that's why sponsors are so important because they have the condition. They see the bullshit. I've sort of dealt with it so much that I see the bullshit. So you could ask her, La Violette, back to her again, you know, what, you know, do you ever distrust your patients? Do you ever think they lie to you?
No.
And what other questions do you ask her? What else would you do?
See, what I wouldn't do, here's what I know for sure. And I would need more time. I don't want to commit to anything because I would need to know everything, and then I would just from that it would be easy for me. But it would just be based around what we said. What I wouldn't do was I wouldn't go after her. I wouldn't make her look like she was lying because one thing that was clear was that she believed what she was saying.
Yes.
It's different, right?
Yeah.
So when you know that someone's being believable, you argue that believability and accuracy are two different things.
Right.
She believes it, but it's based upon lies. And then you talk about how she is yet another victim of Jody Arias.
Right. Now let's jump ahead to what you and I have been arguing about on television, which is her recent suicidality and all this business. I'm not even sure what we were disagreeing about, but it made for good television. I was saying the button you pushed in me, and by the way, Danette pushed another button last night, which is, oh, you know, people that are sick are just, you know, malingering. It's like, no, she's in no position to make that assessment. And anybody that does, that's more of that mob mentality of I want to make you a non-person. You just need to get your shit together.
But let me say this in defense of those people. That was me years ago before I raised my level of awareness about people who have psychiatric, psychological, and most specifically with addiction. And they gave me a badge 20-something years ago, and I had that mentality. I thought everybody was full of you-know-what. Well,
you can say
shit here.
Yeah, okay.
So I don't blame people. They just haven't evolved. They haven't learned. They don't know. They haven't had a family member who's gone through those issues. They don't know.
Yeah, it's very...
Hold on one second.
Yeah. It's very.
My beautiful daughter's asking me for a belt.
Oh, nice. How old is she?
9. Come here, Julia. I'm only doing this podcast, but don't worry. No one's going to buy it, so she doesn't mind. Any belt but this one. I love you. Okay. It's the one belt that I wear every day.
Nice.
Okay, go on.
So
much for my wife keeping the kids out. All right, so we were talking about where we disagreed.
Well, the
right?
mob mentality and how people are so unsophisticated. And that primitiveness mm-hmm. of wanting people just to be responsible for everything, that to me is part of the mob mentality. It's like we'd rather stay in group primitive thought and make it that person is bad and needs
right.
to be destroyed. Then we feel justified right. in piling on that person.
Right.
And that's not good. That is really – and by the way, in this day and age when we understand these things, mm-hmm. that's equivalent of calling people possessed or witches or throwing them in cages and things because they're behaving strangely. It's the same thing. It's not
different. It's part of the reason why – let me just tell you something. It's part of the reason why – I do these shows and I talk. I feel like I need to be that voice of reason and say, well, hold on. Just because prosecutors charge somebody with something doesn't mean they're guilty. Hold on. Just because – and just let's slow down. Just get off the bus for a second.
Have you noticed that juries are more mobby in their assessment, or they've still stayed measured and thoughtful?
I mean, I practice primarily in South Florida, and they tend to be kind of fair down here. So I haven't found a problem. I mean,
okay, so when people do slow down, yeah, when they do slow down and they're asked to sort of be contemplative, they can, which that's a good sign, right?
Well, Casey Anthony is the best example. Are you kidding me? Those people had every reason to find her guilty. And they chose not to, and it was – and you listen to what they said afterwards, it was based upon the lack of evidence in their minds. They couldn't understand exactly whether it was first-degree murder, second-degree murder, manslaughter. They didn't know exactly how it happened. They had an obligation based upon those thoughts to acquit her.
Yeah.
That didn't mean that they thought she wasn't guilty of something. They cried. They wept because they felt that the evidence just wasn't there. That, to me, I mean, I think those people were courageous in a way.
Oh, interesting. That's something you're going to get some Twitter action for.
I know. Right when I said it, I go, oh, shit. Glad it's a podcast, and hopefully no one's going to listen to it.
They might. How do you figure that one went wrong? I think it's because the prosecution got way too focused on the tape as a murder weapon.
No. Work backwards. People try to guess this and that. Oh, it's because of the way that the prosecutor acted when he pointed his finger and did it. No. Start with listening to the jury's remarks, each juror who spoke, listen to them. They gave tremendous insight, and then work backwards and go, you know what, that makes sense. And when you listen to the interviews, they're like, literally grown men were weeping in the jury room because they knew they were letting off someone who was guilty. But it's not about whether somebody did it or didn't do it. It's, was there proof beyond a reasonable doubt that first-degree murder was – and you know what? When you ask 10 different people, you're going to get 10 different responses as to exactly how this took place. And how it took place matters for whether you're going to find first-degree or second-degree or manslaughter. We can't agree on what the facts are.
Let's go back to Jody and talk about that post-conviction interview, because that's where we all started spinning.
I won't give my grade, but I gave it to one of your producers. We're grading her tonight.
I know. It's going to be interesting. We did quite well last night, by the way. Thank you for that. She made sort of passive suicidal statements. I believe.
Stop.
Yeah.
See. Just stop for a second and let's analyze it.
Yeah.
Here, even a cop wrote to me, and he was saying you didn't get it, and people don't get it. And in the system, even words, because we're going to analyze what she really said, but that's a simplistic view of what she said. Anywhere, oh, I'd rather not live than – great. That goes under the umbrella, this huge umbrella of potentially a suicide threat. So we're just going to throw you in, okay?
Right.
When you really dissect it, If this was, 50 years ago and liability wasn't an issue, I don't know that would have even risen to the level of a suicidal thought.
Okay. So your point is well taken. So the idea is that this was a a warden or a jail system that was covering its ass.
Yes.
Because they should something happen to her, they didn't want anybody to point at that interview and go, you see, that was, you know, you have an expert, a paid gun. Like, you know, people don't understand, again, there are people you can pay to say a lot of things because these are gray areas. To say, oh, yeah, that was definitely a suicidal ideation. That should have been responded to with full force. So there's that. I agree. That's part of what they were doing. I also think they were doing some they were anticipating future needs and problems, and they were setting limits up front. In other words, Jody, you're in our system now. You're going to be here for a long time. If you're going to fuck around, this is what's going to happen every goddamn time. You want to talk about suicide? Psych ward. Every time. So we'll start now. We'll start now making it clear to you that there will be consequences for your bullshit actions because you're a manipulative borderline.
Right.
And by the way, I almost feel bad. You know, I feel bad for other people with borderline disorder lumping her in that same, you know, category. You know what I'm saying? Because she's a special case, mind you. She seems to have borderline disorder. Although last night, Dale Archer made a really interesting point, I thought, which was that the borderline process, we call it, or the borderline traits emerge. And I had another a sex addiction expert say the same thing. Emerge in the context of that relationship with Travis, which is fascinating. I don't know quite what to do with that. It still doesn't mean – still borderline behavior. You know what I mean? It's like saying the borderline behavior emerged in the setting of addiction. Well, okay. Still borderline behavior. It still needs to be crashed down upon or it will run amok.
Well, wait, what's the difference between borderline behavior and someone who has borderline personality?
But diagnosed with borderline personality disorder is a lifelong pattern of behavior.
I know, but you said she was exhibiting behavior – and if you go down the list, a lot of the behaviors on that checklist are consistent with, you know, people have defects in character, like we've talked about. You know, so I don't know if she's full-fledged borderline or whether she just shows borderline behavior.
Borderline traits, let's say. Borderline traits. Yeah.
Right?
I don't know either, but his point was well taken that it's certainly full-blown now. It's not so clear it was – I think there is evidence that it was worse because the way the parents were so confused about her and trying to make sense of her as an adolescent. Remember their thing was, oh, well, it was because we cracked down upon her pot growing on the roof that she never forgave us. She's never been the same. No. She was already effed up completely. And it all emerged, blossomed following that crackdown with the sheriffs. That had nothing to do with it. That's not how normal kids don't react that way. This is already a disturbed person. And borderline can come in addiction. Borderline can come from trauma. And borderline has a genetic component to it, too. And it seems like she had a pretty heavy genetic hand. Same with psychopathy. Yeah. It's a genetic thing as much as anything. So anyway.
I know with manic depressive disorder, usually in the 20s it starts to come out.
Yep.
Same thing with borderline?
No. See certain traits in the 20s and it has a life course. It actually gets better in their 40s and 50s. But it emerges in adolescence and young adulthood, and you should see it then. And it's usually pretty easy to spot. And I kind of agree with Archer that it wasn't not that clear that she – certainly not what we're thinking of now as full-blown borderline. So his point is it's well taken. But what was I talking about with the –
Well, we were going back to sorting through, and we were on the same page as to the warden
her. Okay, so he's punishing. He's setting limits now.
Right.
He's covering his ass. And so that's how she ended up in the psych ward. Do we disagree on that?
No.
Okay. So we're in agreement. 100% agreement. Okay. Now, her spending 4 days in the psych ward is what I was taking issue with, her staying in the psych ward. I was saying, listen.
Let me stop you.
Go.
Unless you have spent time in that facility and you know the specific procedures, which I do not, but I think me and Lonnie felt like we know them because they're probably plausibly ineligible to most type of facilities like that, then I don't know that you could say with any certainty and certainly with the passion that you brought to the table that this is what it meant.
Well, I have worked in jail wards. I have. Not in jails, but at hospitals. They're jail wards at county hospitals and things. And
hold on. Jail wards at county hospitals. See, that's not the same.
Well, But it is the same
because... That's not. That's a hospital where there's somebody who got arrested. I've had clients who...
That's right.
They're not ready for the jail yet.
That's right.
They had the accident from fleeing the police, and then they're getting well.
That's right.
Right?
But a hospital... My point is a hospital is a hospital. A licensed professional is a licensed professional. There's not certain standards in some units and certain standards in others. But you're right. There is procedural issues. And then you brought this up, Archer brought this up, and that's why I backed down a little bit, is that my thing is, it's across a weekend. She's not being held against her will. She's just being kept on a psych ward. It may be that they were taking their time at completing the assessment. That would not happen on a non-jail ward because you got to get it done fast because you can't hold people. They want to get out. You only have a few hours to do so, and once it's clear they're not suicidal anymore, you got to let them go. In a jail ward, I think you could take your time. I think you could.
Of course you can.
Yeah.
Here at the Miami jail, anything they've held my clients because they make these innocuous comments that arguably could be interpreted as a threat to themselves, and it's in the arrest affidavit to a cop. They go, okay, you're going to the wacky floor.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
They just do it.
No, I understand. And but then again, you know, once they're there, the professional has an obligation to get them out if it was a spurious recommendation.
But, and I'm sure they're moving so quickly.
I know.
And they've got a full staff because
right.
we're flowing with dollars.
That's right. They may have very limited resources. That's right. And by the way, but, you know, the question was, the two things that sort of got everyone going was, oh, is Jody getting a special treatment there? Is this better than the general population? I don't know. Is it? I would think not.
I don't know that specific jail. I know that... I read that, surprisingly, that she still has contact with others, and there was TV, even though people said something different. The direct answer is I don't know.
Okay.
I think what got people the most was you suggesting that there was some validity to, I guess we combine the whole thing, but you did never, I don't know if you were saying on the front end or on the back end. I think you're making it clear now is on the back end that if she was staying there, it must have been because some legitimate, credible doctor deemed it was appropriate for her to stay there, and that was just...
It was a little bit more than that. I was saying that the jail was doing the right thing with somebody like her,
mm-hmm.
which we both agree, mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah.
Which is set limits, don't let her bullshit about anything, and just have consequence for every nonsense.
Right.
That's number one. And then number two, which is that part, which is that why 4 days? You know, why it would never happen. That if it's a hospital, they would get her out quicker than that. But I've since been
apple
schooled.
Apple to an orange.
Yeah,
I think that
well,
you were
it
arguing
be.
An apple
it
we were talking about
maybe.
An orange.
It shouldn't be, because a hospital is a hospital is what I'm saying. And but by the same token, if somebody doesn't want to leave, see, I'm used to people wanting to leave a psychiatric hospital, and that's what expedites, and the insurance is wanting them to leave. That may be what makes the difference right there as opposed to a jail where they may not want to leave.
There are so many differences in how people – even the infirmary within the jail, some of the things that I hear from my clients, and I hear it all because they're calling me to do things about it, it's completely different than a hospital. Even though they're both – well, there's doctors in the infirmary and real nurses, the treatment that they get for whatever reason cannot plausibly be analogized to any hospital. Just can't.
Well, so like, what do you mean? What is,
run
give me
the
an example.
Jail also, here's the thing: because they can. Who's really fighting? Who's really going to make a difference in the way that people are treated? It's not like they're denying them care. They're brutalizing them. They're making discretionary calls as to where people go and for how long. Nobody's going to pick that battle.
Well, the same. And this is my other point: is the same licensing and professional review agencies that review any hospital are responsible to make sure that is run like a hospital, that it is not a special case, that patients have rights even when they're criminals.
Well, let me
That's
ask,
all
ask
I'm
you this.
That was my if, big – that was, by the way, behind all of it. That was my other point.
Let me ask you this. If somebody is still saying – could it be just as simple as this? Yeah, you know, hey, Joe, do you still feel the same way? Yeah, I do. I don't know that I want to live – okay, thank you. And that's it. It could be – like that's enough.
To keep her there.
They don't have to do a number of tests like all these doctors, you know, and psychiatrists do, the tests we heard about, the this test, the number with this and the answer.
Yeah.
All that stuff that bored the crap out of me during the Jody trial. They don't have to do that. Hey, Jody, You still looking to kill yourself potentially? Oh, I don't want to live it. Okay, hang in there, darling.
Yes,
you know, and
that's
then
that's
what it.
Well, that's right. And then they have to decide how much of this is bullshit, how much of it isn't, and how much of a liability can we take.
At some point, she said, you know what? I've been in here long enough. I proved my point. I let people. Her plan, I think, if we really analyze it, was to somehow get some type of sympathy. Whatever. We can get in that mind if we want to. I don't have to. I know that she did this whole thing for her benefit. It was all planned out. And at some point, she thought, you know what? It's time for me to go back. And then she said the things that needed to be said. She knows what she needed to say. And then she got back to where she wanted to go.
Now, you're talking about this as though she has some sort of cognitive plan in place, like a literally.
I have no doubt about that.
Tell me about that.
And then, remember I said, Exhibit A, let's listen to the phone call? I had said all those things. And then when I got home, someone said, you need to play this for Dr. Drew. I go, what? What is it? And I listened. I go, oh, my God, there it is. It's like having the secret tape.
What is her plan in that tape? What do you think?
Oh God! I said if we're going to have to get into her head, I would need more time to really think it through. I could just
okay, but hold on. Let me just tell you that I am not accustomed to dealing with criminals and psychopaths. And so if you're going to graduate into, if we're going to assume she's all of that criminal psychopath, then they are exquisitely goal directed. They are cunning and planning.
Did you see her testify for 18 days?
I think it's a mix. Because I think she has a borderline.
A lot more of the percentage towards the cunning, planning, manipulative. I've got my faculties. Every question, I couldn't sustain that for 18 days.
Well, that's the point.
I thought she was amazing.
That's the point. That's why I believe it's a worldview. It's a emotional process because people can't do that cognitively day after day. It's their feelings and their point of view. Begs no alternative. So it's easy for them to stay with that and respond from that point of view without having to review a plan in their head.
To answer your question, by the way.
All right, go.
I got a thought came through me.
Okay.
Okay. So she told the reporter, if it's first-degree murder, I want you here.
Right away.
If it's second or third, the second in manslaughter was going to be a huge victory for her, so she didn't need to do that interview.
Right. And she, by the way, I could tell that she assumed that was going to be what it was. She really expected that. She expected.
Well, think about it.
So I think the manipulation was, we're not going to be doing this interview. See, I think that's what was behind the phone call, which is like, I'm not getting first degree. So if I did, I would do it with you, but I'm not going to. So we'll have to figure things out. That was the manipulation to me. That's what I thought it was.
Oh, no. Listen, she's had 4 or 5 years of Nurmi telling her and other lawyers telling her, this is hard to win. That's part of the 9 out of 10 days I don't like you. That's Nurmi butting heads with her.
Yeah.
Nurmi is a decent guy who is dealing with a gal who did a really horrific thing, and he probably feels for Travis, too.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah, I believe that, too.
I've just been there with so many of these just nasty clients. So what was my point? My point is that she had a plan that, if it's first, then I know that now I'm fighting for my life.
Right.
And so I want to do this reverse psychology thing, which is going to confuse some jurors. You know, does she want death? Does she not want death? She planned that out.
Okay.
That was absolutely brilliant. That is going to trip some of them up.
See, I'm so accustomed to dealing with borderlines, and they are brilliant, but their brilliance is much more of a dynamic brilliance in the sense that they create a process that is – mind-boggling that they just sweep you into a vortex that you can't imagine. So my take on this, and I've got a great call up there to follow up on this from Adam, we'll get in just a second. My take is this was her borderline bullshit. And you've heard me say this before, Mark, which is she has a murderous rage, a borderline rage it's called. We know she had it. We've seen what it can do.
Right.
There's no doubt. She has that rage. She can't get anywhere near it. It's totally disavowed. It doesn't exist. It only came out because he attacked me. He deserved it. He had it coming. I don't really have a murderous rage. But the way I'm going to manage this feeling that I can't get anywhere near is I'm going to put it in you. You are going to kill me as a way of managing my murderous rage, and then you will be guilty. Because
right.
I can't feel guilty for the rage I have because I don't really have it. It's you
right.
that has it, and you're going to take it and give me my freedom. So fuck you.
I agree.
It's a big
F
you.
I think, I think a more simplistic thing. My wife said it the other day. She cares about how she looks physically, because we saw how it was all about the makeup. The headstand was to get the blood flowing, because she has red cheeks. Yeah. She cares so much about how, physically how she looks.
That's all there is
about her. She's
an empty vessel.
So, but that's her driving force, you know? Like I don't know, to priests, you know, God and helping others, driving force. Her driving force is how she looks to people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I have no idea. You know better than I whether that's a part of her
borderline. Just emptiness.
Or narcissism.
You're right.
Or,
the narcissist and borderline feel chronic emptiness. They feel empty, empty, empty.
So. And let me just say this. Those who somehow buy into that she doesn't care if she lives or dies, she has lived a pretty decent existence in jail. She wants to continue that.
Right, which
she
is
has
kind
a
of
life
interesting.
In prison.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I wonder, somebody's got to tell me exactly what that is someday. Isn't that fascinating? Because she alluded to it in the interview that people want her autograph, people are congratulating her. It's like crazy.
Oh.
But it really, this whole goddamn thing is the libretto from the movie Chicago. The whole
it
thing.
Is. No, I agree
I
with
mean,
you.
I mean, point by point. I mean, it's unreal.
Right. It's just like that. And the other thing, wait, I was going to make another point. Jody, in prison.
Having a life. She wants to have that life. She wants to sustain it. She doesn't really want to die.
Right. It'll come to me. Talk about something else.
Let's get this call. This is a good call. This guy's name is Adam. He is 40. He's calling from New York. Adam, go right at him.
Hi, Dr. Drew. Hi, Mark. Yeah, my question from watching you guys on HRN every night is, we know that she's guilty. We know that she's a menace to society and should not be let out in public ever again.
Well, hold on. Let's just take that statement, because I think that's interesting in and of itself. Mm-hmm. I don't know that's true. I'm being polemic here.
I admit that's my opinion.
I suspect it may be. You what?
I admit it's my opinion because I've dealt with borderlines like her myself. I got a strong vibe when I first saw her.
Oh, that's interesting. And so do you have the same kind of ambivalence I have about even discussing her borderline disorder? Because it's unfair to other borderlines. You know what I mean? I know the vibe and I know how tough they are to deal with, but she's otherly. You know what I mean?
Well, very much so. I mean, fortunately for me, none of the borderlines I dealt with were homicidal. So,
right. Right, which they typically are not. They typically are not. It's a special breed of cat that get into that kind of thing. So is she a menace to society, or, as Dr. Archer said, is she only a menace in the context of that relationship?
Mark? I think she's a menace to people, even if she doesn't kill anyone anymore. She's the type of person who will go off and sow chaos amongst whoever she comes in contact
but
with.
That's all borderlines do that, Adam. Do they all need to be locked up? Not so much.
I don't know. I'd quite like to see some of the people I dealt with kept away from everyone else.
Tell us a story. What happened to you?
I had a long friendship with somebody, and interestingly enough, we were so codependent that people thought we had a romantic and sexual relationship when we did not. Now this person seems to flip, so she might have some bipolarity as well.
Well, but by the way, people equate. Some people think that bipolar and borderline are on a spectrum where they're the same, and that flipping and flopping is sometimes feels bipolar, sometimes it feels borderline. So go ahead. Yeah. She flipped and flopped. Yeah, sometimes she's all good, all bad, mm-hmm. very high, very low. That's sort of typical of both disorders. Go ahead.
Yeah, but what seems to define what seems to be in the borderlines I deal with is this kind of narcissistic self-obsession and this absolute inability to admit that to their own flaws and that they might be wrong in anything,
right,
and to apologize for anything at all. It's always everyone else's fault. It's not you. It's not me. It's you. You're the one who's got it wrong. You're the one. You're the one who got everything wrong.
And that's sort of typical.
So
and Adam, that's typical of that's sort of the core issue in all personality disorders.
Yes.
They don't see anything that happens to them as emanating from them, mm-hmm. as their role in what happens in their life. They can't be objective about that. Then the other issue, and then narcissists particularly do that, and this mm-hmm. borderline is a narcissistic spectrum disorder. And then on top of that, borderlines use projective identification where some of that, it's not me, it's you, is literally them putting her feelings in you. And then then messing with them, then manipulating them, so you feel crazed. You feel crazed around. They're going, wait a minute, I don't feel like this normally. I'm guilty. I'm angry. I'm rageful. Where'd that come from? Well, it's mm-hmm. actually her feelings that you're acquiring. Let's say, Mark, does any of this make sense to you? Does this? No, Mark.
A little bit.
You've gone to sleep. You all right?
A little bit.
Right, I'm fascinated. I'm sorry. Okay,
yeah,
so Adam.
No, I see it. I see it.
Okay.
And so, most of the time, prosecutors could give a rat's ass about all this. They you get too deep into it. It's too much
of a rabbit hole.
Well, because there is a difference between a sick person and a criminal. They overlap in certain areas, but there is a difference. Like I said, I don't deal with criminals very much. So, Adam, what is the question about Jody then?
Well, the question is, what should society do with her if you don't want to execute her? For instance, do we just keep her locked away in jail where she gets to play queen of the psychopath sorority, or do you sort of have doctors and psychiatrists study her and to see what makes her brain tick, especially since you can basically hook somebody up to a scanner these days and see what parts of their brain lights up when that lies, or when they lie, or when they react to certain things, since we know that she's going to compulsively lie about everything.
Yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, that could be interesting for scientific and medical study as well.
And let's throw another fly in the ointment. We really don't know if she's psychopath or not. If she is, she mm-hmm. definitely needs to be kept away. If she's mostly borderline, she'll get better with time. Borderlines get better in their 40s, 50s, and 60s.
I kind of wish there was a third option. In terms of what we can do with her, one is life in prison, which mm-hmm. people say, I hope she rots. I want her to think about what she did. That's bullshit. She's not going to rot anywhere,
right.
And she'll be well taken care of.
And so she's not going to think about it or take any responsibility for it because her point of view begs no alternative. That's just
correct.
The way it
is. That's not an option.
Yeah.
And then killing her, I don't know. I don't rule that out. A third option would be that she sits on the equivalent of death row, which means she's not with the general population.
Oh, that's
she's literally locked down for all that time, but then they don't necessarily kill her, which is going to happen anyway, because if she gets death, it'll be 20 years with all the appeals before anything happens.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Adam, what do you think?
I think she should just be locked away, and basically the fit punishment is to not let her have interactions with people, because that's what she craves most of all. That's where she gets to
she's
manipulate
get it.
And get power.
She's going to get it. That's part of. They don't deny prisoners television, phone privileges, interaction with the other, hot inmates. It's gonna all go down.
Mm-hmm. It'll be that would be an interesting study in and of itself, Adam. I don't know the answer. It's all to me. It's a field I stay away from. Frankly, there's a reason I don't get involved in all this. A reason I can't hang with criminals. I just don't get it. I can't get my head around it. And when people start talking about psychopaths and how they think and work, my head explodes. I can't even get my head around it.
Yeah, I mean, she comes across like a character out of a Jim Thompson or a Charles Williford novel, Charles Williford being a former resident of Florida as well. And those are writers who seem to understand psychopaths intimately well, disturbingly.
And by the way, Florida is a great place to study all that. Just saying, Mark. Just saying.
I don't disagree with you.
Coral and I do a game called Germany or Florida, and whenever mm-hmm. some crazy macabre story comes out, people lay it out in front of us, and then they ask us, where did it happen, Germany or Florida?
mm-hmm.
And it's always one or the other.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well.
Yeah, these days if it's cannibalism, it's probably going to be Germany.
Yeah, generally cannibalism, but if there's a second floor, Germany,
yep.
Trailer, Florida. Anything involving swamp life, alligators, obviously Florida. Cops, Florida. Germans don't call the cops when they're eating their husband.
Drugs,
yeah, Florida. So it's food, Germany. So it's interesting.
Fake boobs.
Florida. All right, Adam. So thank you. It's a provocative question. Do you think this conversation, I'm interested that you watch the television conversation we have, which is a different kind of conversation. Is this interesting to you, what we're doing today?
Yeah, it is interesting because it's much better than the kind of than the usual hysterical, reactionary, judgmental thing of, oh, she's evil. It's an attempt to understand the pathology and the social forces and how the legal forces deal with something like this.
See, I think and by the way, thank you for saying that, but I believe television is interesting in that you've got to create the entertainment element that attracts people's eyes, which is the drama of all this, which includes us reacting to it. Mm-hmm. But we can trickle in this material too.
Yeah.
Like I'm watching Chris and Gary here fall asleep. Mark says he's fallen asleep. This would not go on television. This would not go anywhere.
But this works on radio.
Well, podcast, it does work. That's why I love podcasting. Thanks, Adam, for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam.
You guys.
Right. See, Mark, am I converting you to podcasting?
I don't have time. If it wasn't you, I wouldn't be doing. I have a million things to do. I don't have the time.
All right, but I can let you go if you really got to go right now. Because is there anything else we should get into here? But just before we wrap it up, just sort of this is our chance to kind of.
I never fully got out. Like, you know, people still think like, so you can apologize for your bashing Juan. You know,
who?
I have
you?
Nothing against the guy, Juan Martinez.
You're going to apologize for that?
No. Some people know. So what are you going to say now, Mark? I've gotten a lot of tweets because I was very clear that I did not think that he was making some of the strongest choices during the trial. I still feel that way.
Right.
I always thought he was going to get a first-degree murder conviction in spite of the way that he was handling some of the things, not because of it.
So because
and
because
I don't
it's such
owe any apologies to anybody.
It's such a clear-cut situation.
It just is not how I would have handled it, and all my colleagues who I spoke to agreed. It's not like vanilla or chocolate ice cream, you know, which is just a flavor. There were objective things that he was doing that just to me defied common sense. And I don't know why I'm picking now to bash
right,
him more. It's not the point. You know?
Let's talk finally about the mob mentality, because
yes.
That's where I started this conversation.
Yes.
Do you share my concerns about that? Do you understand what?
Yeah,
how
sure. You know when it'll affect someone when they have a family member who's on trial, when it affects them, all of a sudden
it's not likely. My fear is it's going to start to bleed into the sort of political sphere. That's when it gets kind of scary.
Some of the worst laws were made because of the mob mentality.
What do you mean? Like what?
You
mean to protect against the mob?
Laws to make a difference where something happens, whether it be, God, I don't know. I mean, we could start with the minimum mandatory drug sentences, you know.
Right.
People, we war on drugs.
Oh, yeah, harumph.
And then right. Next thing you know, you're packing the prisons with, you know, people who moved a suitcase just, you know, for a silly reason,
right.
You know.
Right.
And that suitcase contained drugs. There's plenty of laws that are made that are just reactionary, because of course you just give it a creative name like you know little girl's law, whatever the child is who died, and now we're going to ban anybody from X, Y, and Z.
Right, right.
And some of those laws are great, and some are just are nuts.
All right. Well, listen, we will go study the Aztec Codex and pre-revolutionary France. And then,
I promise you
and then,
I won't.
Then you, and then you and I can have a conversation about whether or not my historical perspective has any validity or not.
I am fairly certain of several things in life. I'm going to see
That's
my daughter
one.
Perform on stage tonight, and
I'm
not going to look up the Aztecs.
How cool. What is she doing? Anything?
Singing.
Oh,
she's
fine.
With the Sensations. Her school has
lovely.
A
lovely.
Yes.
Sunshine.
Yeah.
Yes. How fantastic.
Yeah.
Down there in Florida and Miami. Yeah. Mark Iglarsh, at Mark Iglarsh is the Twitter handle. So if you want to bash on him for bashing on Juan, that's where you go.
Yeah.
His website is speaktomark.com. And Mark, I will continue. I'm so grateful for your participation on our HLN program. You know you are a critical piece of what we do there. And I just want everyone to know how grateful I am for you.
I appreciate it. And if it was anyone else, I assure you, yours is the only show I do at night, really, because it's very difficult for me.
Thanks. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I'll see you tonight.
Okay.
Again, the click-through at Amazon at DrDrew.com and the podcast CD, Swingin' Sounds, don't forget that, and the Adam and Drew Tour, check that out as well. And then I will see you next time.
Digital.